Thank you, John Guy. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, June 8th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A High Court judge has blocked the Zimbabwe government's attempt to remove vendors from city streets.
The exercise that had been planned for execution today, 8 June 2015, was set aside. It was agreed that that cleanup exercise would not take place.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, says preparations for Wednesday's parliamentary by-elections in Zimbabwe are on course.
And an American congressman says divisions in opposition ranks are not auguring well for the democratic movement fighting for change in Zimbabwe.
We're hoping that the opposition will speak out, solidify, you know, come to a joint vision for Zimbabwe, because the people deserve better than what they have now.
A Harare High Court judge today granted a consent order or an application filed by human rights lawyers representing some informal traders who sought to stop Defence Minister Sydney Sekeramai, Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo, and Harare Mayor Bernard Menyanyeni from chasing away, evicting and confiscating goods belonging to vendors or arresting them Monday or any other day. Chombo ordered unregistered vendors to vacate the streets or face forcible eviction today by security agents, including the National Army. The lawyers representing the Zimbabwe Informal Sectors Organization, or ZISO, also sought an order to instruct the Joint Operations Command and other security service members to desist from dealing with the informal traders and not to interfere with their business activities in any way.
The order came after Small Enterprises Minister Stembe Sonyoni had already announced the postponement of the evictions to the 26th of this month. Justice Felicitas Chatukuta did not disclose the full judgment but said the reasons would follow on a later date. Attorney Chris Mike tells Studio 7 they hope that the ministers of local government and defense, together with the mayor of the city of Harare, will abide by the High Court ruling.
The matter was heard before the High Court, and the parties agreed that this is an issue that can be resolved amicably without serious acrimony. And therefore, there was consent basically to three issues, being firstly that the exercise that had been planned for execution today, 8 June 2015, was set aside. It was agreed that that cleanup exercise would not take place. Indeed, government had made indication previously about the suspension of that exercise, but that announcement had not been formalized, and it was therefore formalized today, whereby representatives of government indicated that there would be no cleanup exercise today, Monday, 8 June 2015. Secondly, it was agreed that whatever exercise or plan will be or might be executed by government, that plan would be in accordance with the law. Due process would be observed. It was also then agreed, thirdly, that the military should not be deployed for the execution of this plan under present circumstances.
Do you see the three respondents abiding by the court ruling?
As lawyers, it is our hope that government will lead by example by respecting court orders. The rule of law is critical to the proper functioning of any democratic society, and it is our expectation that government will do the right thing and respect the ruling that came from court.
That was lawyer Chris Mike representing the Zimbabwe Informal Sectors Organization on the phone from Harare with Studio 7.
We also reached Harare City Councillor Peter Moy of the MDCT, who says government is trying to pass the buck onto the council when it is failing to provide jobs for the people who have no choice but to go onto the streets to eke out a living.
We don't
have enough space to accommodate all people who are flocking into town to sell their wares. So the problem is that people are too many, and you cannot register all of them. We just have a few places, and those places have been there for quite a long time. Even if you take them to Coventry Holding Bay, it won't solve the problem. The problem will continue. It will persist because the solution is to get people to be employed. There's nobody want to be a vendor. All the people who are able to work, they are eager to work. They cannot go and they become a vendor when you came from the University of Zimbabwe with a degree to go and sell juice cans. So the places are not enough to accommodate all the people.
Now, come the 23rd of this month, do you see the government finally chasing the vendors away from the streets?
They don't have the solution. This government is bankrupt in terms of thinking. And I don't see them becoming able to remove those people, because people are going to flock into town on a daily basis. Some are going to come from as far as Mtoko to come and be in town. They created that problem because the first lady is the one who invited the people to come and sell their wares into town. And we are against that idea in the first place.
That was Harare City Councillor Peter Moyo of the MDCT. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Secretary General Dumisani Ncube of the Bulawayo Upcoming Traders Association says despite the reprieve, illegal vendors are not coming forward to regularize their business.
We are very happy and we are encouraging most of the informal traders to register so that we will see the number of how many people are already in the streets so that we can look for places for them.
Do you think that the numbers of those who are in the streets are going to be accommodated? Is there space for all of them?
I don't think we are going to accommodate everybody, but at least we are saying if we can accommodate 3/4 of the members, then we will be happy. Some of them will try and share.
Now, can you tell us, are they coming forward to register and formalize themselves?
The problem is people are hiding and they think that what they've been given, the further postponement, is with the advantage. Yet if they register, it's good so that we can approach the parent ministry and request for more space for them.
And that was Dumisani Ncube, Secretary General of the Bulawayo Upcoming Traders Association. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Divisions in the opposition ranks are not auguring well for the democratic movement fighting for change in Zimbabwe. That, according to U.S. Congressman Chris Smith, chairman of the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights, and International Organizations. Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo reports.
Speaking after a congressional hearing on the future of the U.S.-Zimbabwe relations last week, Mr. Smith said the United States is concerned about factionalism tearing the opposition apart. Instead of splintering, Congressman Smith says opposition voices must close ranks and speak with one voice for the advancement of democracy in Zimbabwe.
We're hoping that the opposition will speak out, solidify, you know, come to a joint vision for Zimbabwe, because the people deserve better than what they have now, that's for sure. Again, the people deserve a real democracy. Zimbabwe has a great future. It is impaired through its current governance model of Mugabe.
The congressman added that while the United States does not take political sides, a divided opposition puts Washington in an awkward position.
It does put the U.S. in a difficult situation. We don't pick winners or losers. We just don't. You know, it's up to the people of Zimbabwe to do that. But we hope that people who really espouse to true human rights observance will be smart and solidify, you know, rally, become a real potent force for good.
The official opposition movement for democratic change has over the years splintered into many formations, with the latest being the split of the Renewal faction due to power struggles. Political analyst Dr. Brilliant Mhlanga says he agrees with Congressman Smith.
It makes a lot of sense In fact, we have said it that the opposition must try to find a kind of coalescence of efforts, meeting ground. It's natural that human beings will always have differences, but there should all obviously be a reason why they should come together given a situation like that. But then the other problem is the one that a critical mind should raise regarding the interest America has in sounding so worried about such a situation.
But ZANU-PF leaning analyst Maurice Ngwenya has a different take. He says divisions in the opposition are justified as the parties are pushing a foreign agenda to remove ZANU-PF from power.
Many people have since quit the so-called opposition politics, leaving those few quote holding officials in those opposition parties to remain with their families and a few friends and colleagues. But otherwise, they lost a long time ago credibility and any support base whatsoever.
Coalition efforts among opposition forces have previously failed due to what some analysts are calling selfish reasons. And as the 2018 general elections beckon, there is no indication whatsoever they may succeed this time around. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 in Washington, I'm Tungamili Nkomo.
The 25th African Union Summit kicked off in South Africa yesterday under the theme The Year of Women Empowerment. VOA correspondent Benedict Nhlapo reports from Johannesburg.
South African Minister of International Relations and Cooperation Maite Nkoyane Mashabane said her country has made all arrangements for a productive African Union summit. Addressing reporters in Pretoria on Monday, she said the eradication of poverty is at the top of the agenda.
It's going to take our will to fold our sleeves, pull our socks, particularly our younger generation, and work for the prosperity of this continent and total poverty eradication through radical economic transformation into your own hands.
Africa is developing rapidly. The countries with the fastest growing economies in the world are found on the continent. But experts believe the lack of good roads, electrical grids and other infrastructure is hampering this growth. Elham Ibrahim, the AU's Commissioner for Infrastructure and Energy, said this topic will also be given a great deal of attention as part of the AU's new Partnership for Africa's Development, NEPAD, Economic Cooperation Program.
We have a permanent session in every summit for the NEPAD, where infrastructure is considered, and also for the Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiative.
Political unrest in Burundi and the war in Sudan will be discussed, and leaders will also take a closer look at the continued threat of terrorism in countries like Kenya, Nigeria, and Somalia. With thousands of African migrants losing their lives in the Mediterranean Sea while trying to reach greener pastures in Europe, issues of migration will also feature on the agenda. Officials will discuss the continent's position on proposed changes at the United Nations, paying particular attention to the role and level of representation of African states in the UN system. Minister Mashabane denied allegations that some African countries were boycotting the summit because of recent xenophobic violence that took place in South Africa.
We have received confirmation that all AU member states will be represented. Majority of the heads of states would be attending. So there is no boycotting of the African Union summit in South Africa.
The summit ends with heads of state meetings on June 14th and 15th.
That was our correspondent Benedict Nhlapo reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at the health service delivery in Zimbabwe with Tatenda Gumbo.
And are Zimbabwean horses not fit to contest in major races? Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called Monday for his country's fractious political parties to act responsibly in the aftermath of elections that ended his ruling majority in parliament, but financial markets quickly recoiled at the uncertainty.
Star South African runner Oscar Pistorius could be eligible for parole by August, less than a year after he was convicted in the shooting death of his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp.
Pakistan's military says 7 Pakistani soldiers and 19 terrorists were killed in overnight intense clashes in a tribal region bordering Afghanistan.
And U.S. President Barack Obama voiced confidence in the fight against Islamic State militants and said the United States will increase aid to Iraqi troops to fight the group as he meets with Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi on the sidelines of the G7 summit in Germany on Monday. This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from Washington, D.C.
Zimbabwe's health services sector has over the years been ravaged by a lack of funds to conduct various programs, and the departure of doctors and nurses for greener pastures in various nations, resulting in acute drug shortages and shortages of critical manpower. By 2000, large numbers of doctors and nurses had left the country for Britain, Australia, South Africa, and other nations, leaving state institutions barely managing to provide basic services. The situation worsened when historic inflation devastated the Zimbabwe dollar following unprecedented economic decline in the country between 2001 and 2009.
It was during this period that, according to the United Nations, a cholera outbreak in Zimbabwe claimed more than 4,000 lives by March 2009 after affecting 90,000 people. Any humanitarian assistance was channeled through strategic development agencies, as some top state officials were and are still under targeted sanctions imposed by the West. And although humanitarian assistance continued, donor fatigue affected the funding of some projects targeting mainly issues like HIV/AIDS prevention. Despite the poor health delivery system, health practitioners and advocates have continued to work within the sector, attempting to facilitate better health services. For Perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo reached former Health Minister Dr. Henry Madzorera, who says poor health services are an indication that the country's economy is not performing well.
We've got a very underfunded public health sector with a disgruntled health workers and general deterioration of infrastructure. And I would like to say we saw an improvement during the time of the Progressive government, but all the gains that we had during that time are being eroded now because mainly of the underfunding of the sector. If you go to the private health sector, which is supposed to be a fallback sector for those who can afford, it is also suffering very seriously. Prime funders of health care, like Premier Service Medical Aid Society, being unable to fund services. And so you find also in the private sector, health care workers are disgruntled. They are going for extremely long periods without pay. And generally, people cannot afford cash for private services.
You spoke about the challenges of the underfunding of the health sector. Can you speak on that issue, including the issue of donor fatigue that Zimbabwe has seen in the past few years?
When we left, which is 2008, 2 years ago now, we had quite a few donors on board, a lot of funding projects going on in the various districts, but mainly with the Health Transition Fund, which was really covering more or less the whole country. And one of the most important things was the Health Worker Retention Scheme. I have not followed up really on how the Health Transition Fund is going on right now, but judging from the disgruntlement among the health workers in the public sector and the way in which they are leaving the country, in other words, we've started again that era of brain drain where people leave Zimbabwe to go and work elsewhere. I would say all is not well in the health sector. And of course, donors cannot continue to fund our health care system. I'm aware that the retention scheme, the Global Fund scheme, was being scaled down. Even before we left, they had already started scaling down. So I would expect that there's a lot of disgruntlement from the health workers because of reduced earnings. The only thing that can solve our problems is really a revitalization of the economy in general, so that the government can honor its obligations to the public health sector. The second thing is we should have a national health insurance scheme, a scheme into which everybody contributes. When the burden is shared, it becomes lighter.
There, of course, still are some donors, the EU, the American government, which are assisting Zimbabwe with what you spoke about, the Health Transition Fund. But looking at what you spoke about, the sector itself and the overarching issue of the economy, how much, in your view, will it impact the revitalization of the sector?
Donors will fund specific items within the health budget. They will not fund the whole budget. They will not try to run the government for us. But the government must have money to run certain core services. And if donors come, like the Global Fund, they say, we're going to help you with HIV, TB, and malaria. That's what they'll do. But they will not do a lot more than that, outside their mandate. So donor fatigue, yes. We've heard that some donors are coming up and helping the health sector. And we are grateful for that because we are aware that it's a global economy. We need to, healthcare is global. We need to continue helping each other.
Dr. Mazorera, we can't ignore, of course, the successes within the health sector itself. Looking at the challenges, there are still much that is going on within the sector to assist Zimbabweans.
So there are certain things that we're doing right. We've got good health workers. Health workers who jump when problems like cholera arise. And we must give them credit. They are very dedicated. But this continuous underfunding of the sector undermines their dedication. Zimbabwe has done very well also in other areas like the National AIDS Trust Fund. I think that one will continue to trump it as a big success. But we've not been able to go beyond the National AIDS Trust Fund. Having experienced its successes, I thought by now would have gone into full-blown national health insurance. But no, we haven't yet. So we need to push our government to really go that way.
That was former Health Minister Dr. Henry Mazorera speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, says preparations for Wednesday's parliamentary by-elections in Zimbabwe are on course. But the election has been marred by reports of massive vote buying and violence. Reporter Blessing Zulu has more.
ZEC chairperson Justice Rita Makarau says preparations for the polls are going smoothly and most of the logistics are in place in what is promising to be an exciting election, boycotted by the main opposition parties but contested by 11 smaller political parties and a record number of independent candidates.
The latest position is that we are almost ready. We are just putting the final touches.
Makarau says more than 400,000 people have been registered to vote, 104 candidates from 11 political parties and some independent candidates who contest the National Assembly seats in various constituencies. Election monitoring bodies such as the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, Heal Zimbabwe, and the Zimbabwe Peace Project have been complaining about the level of violence, especially in Hurungwe West, where former ZANU-PF member Temba Muliskwa is contesting as an independent against the ZANU-PF candidate Keith Guzam. The Electoral Court is expected to rule tomorrow if the election must be postponed as requested by Muliskwa, who is citing violence and voter intimidation. Muliskwa claims that violence is continuing in the constituency even today.
The situation is not good. I thought that the last hours before the elections, people at least respect the will of the people. But they've been going around beating people as usual. Chiwaka Nyama, they beat my agent. Masanga, they beat my agent. But people are still determined to ensure that things go the way that they want to exercise their right to vote.
The chairman of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, Elasto Mugwadi, was also forced to dispatch a monitoring team to Urungwe West. Mugwadi says they have a report, but the commission is yet to officially release it.
Yeah, well the report is almost ready for service on the relevant authorities who are supposed to benefit from it. If you were to get in touch with our office, they will give you the details.
Makarau says they have received some reports on the alleged violence in Urungwe West, but since it is a matter before the courts, it is difficult to comment.
Yes, it was reported to our office, and unfortunately I may not be able to comment too much detail on that issue because the same report was also turned into a court application, which is before the Electoral Court.
The Zimbabwe Election Support Network Director, Rindai Chipfunde Vava, says apart from violence in Urungwe West, they are concerned by alleged vote-buying in some constituencies.
Yes, we observed many incidents of vote-buying, particularly using food aid. And in some constituencies, there is also the use of vote-buying using cash.
But Makarau says those incidents have not been reported to her office. Independent candidate Thembelihle Sibanda of Luveve constituency in Bulawayo says victory is certain, though the campaign has not been smooth.
Well, I am confident of my win if the ZANU-PF does not do their tricks that they normally use.
In Harare, Glenview candidate Moses Nkomo of Transform Zimbabwe echoes the same sentiments.
The assurances that we are getting from the electorate is that they know what they want and they will not give ZANU-PF a chance.
In Manicaland province, Chikanga Dangamvura candidate Ruramai Musiwa of the National Constitutional Assembly says he is confident he will win despite the problems he has been facing.
Our preparations are fully backed by the party and we are well-known constituents-wide.
But ZANU-PF candidate Isao Mupfumi, also contesting in the election, says his opponents stand no chance as independent candidates or from smaller parties as they cannot bring development in the area.
So we realize that voting for an opposition will not make any difference in this country because you need to be connected to government for any development.
With a record number of independent candidates, what are their chances? We turn to Margaret Dongo, one of the very few candidates to take on the ruling ZANU-PF party's well-oiled political machinery and score a historic victory.
It depends on the understanding of the public, whether the public are fed up with the system and what is happening.
Apart from the violence and intimidation, constituencies where the by-elections are being held are enjoying national attention and improvement in their infrastructure, mostly from the ruling ZANU-PF party. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
The 2015 OK Grand Challenge has come and gone, leaving a lot of lessons for Zimbabwe. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
Tens of thousands of people were there at Borodo Race Course at the weekend to witness not their own homegrown horses, but South African horses battle for the $40,000 set money on offer. There was not even a single Zimbabwean horse in what is the most followed horse racing event in the country. This clearly shows that the level of how Zimbabwean horses have gone down, as most of them no longer qualify to compete in Grade 1 and Grade 2 races. But in the end, it was John Grace Yeman who won the challenge, completing a double after earlier on won the Tasso Sankar. The only Zimbabwean consolation was that Yeman was ridden by former Zimbabwean champion jockey Quinton Ridu and is being groomed by George Tenje while staying in Zimbabwe. Ridu, who also won the Tasso Sankar with the same horse, is looking forward to the last major horse racing event of the season. That is the Republic Cup.
There's the three big races we all look forward to in the season, and the last one is in a month's time, which is the Republic Cup. It's also a nice big stake, over 1,900 metres, and it'll suit this horse as well.
Now, football. Kigen Inn has extended their lead at the top of the Kasolaga Premier Soccer League table after a hard 4-2-1 win over Chapungu. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when we'll be discussing the forthcoming parliamentary by-elections set for Wednesday. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington, D.C.
And this is Chris Gandes. Please continue to stay tuned to Studio 7 as we bring you news in Ndebele. Good night, Zimbabwe.